Good morning, church.
Good morning.
For those who are visiting, we welcome you, and those watching and worshiping online, we welcome you as well. We bring to a close today our series, Waiting on God, and I want to pull two words from Psalm 40, which we're going to be looking at, but two words that may be, at least for some of us, some of the most hated words in the Bible, okay? I waited patiently. Okay, waiting is bad enough, right? But throw in the patience concept? Oh, man, you know, that takes all the fun that we get from fretting and complaining, being anxious. Waited patiently. All of life is really about waiting. And there's always something else that comes along that we have to wait for. Portia was away for a week helping our oldest son move to Mississippi, and I couldn't wait to see her when she got back. Her flight came in last Wednesday night from Atlanta to Asheville, and I was waiting for her there. And then there was the bag. And we had to wait in baggage claim for the bag to come through. It took longer for the bag to come than it did the plane to come from Atlanta to Asheville. And then driving home, traffic was dead stopped on I-26 and for miles. And did I mention it was 12:45 a.m. in the morning? Where were all these people? Why were they driving and not at home in their bed sleeping? You know? Why were we not? One word, construction. You know, waiting is just part of life. And right when we finally get what we're waiting for, when all is happy, something new pops up that we have to wait for. Well, here's the point. And this is really the point in this whole series, that if we don't learn to wait well, wait patiently, continually on the Lord, well, we're going to have one miserable life as we wait and making a lot of others miserable as well with our fretting and complaining. And so the question comes down to, what does it look like to continually wait patiently for the Lord? To wait patiently for the Lord. Well, let's think about this as we turn to Psalm 40. And I'm going to be looking at a good bit of this psalm, but just I'm going to read the first five verses and then verse 16 and 17. But hear God's word. I waited patiently for the Lord. He inclined to me and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit of destruction and out of the miry bog and set my feet upon a rock, making my steps secure. He put a new song in my mouth, a song of praise to our God. Many will see and fear and put their trust in the Lord. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. You have multiplied, O Lord our God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. None can compare with you. I will proclaim and tell of them, yet they are more than can be told. Verse 16. But may all who seek you rejoice and be glad in you. May those who love your salvation say continually, great is the Lord. As for me, I am poor and needy. But the Lord takes thought for me. You are my help and my deliverer. Do not delay, O my God. To wait patiently for the Lord calls us to position our hearts differently. And this is not a one-and-done thing, but there's a continual repositioning of the heart as we live, because our heart naturally drifts. It drifts away from these positions, these postures that the heart really must own. And these postures are two, these positions are two. We have to believe the absolutes and shift our vision. Okay, believe the absolutes and shift our vision. First, believe the absolutes. And the absolutes are stated clearly in this psalm, verse 16 and 17. Great is the Lord. As for me, I am poor and needy. There are two absolutes here. Our absolute helplessness and God's absolute sufficiency. Our absolute helplessness, I am poor and needy, and God's absolute sufficiency, great is the Lord. Now, we do not naturally believe these. Our hearts often drift from these. That's why there's this constant having to reposition our hearts to believe them. Because, I mean, we tend to think we're not that helpless. We tend to think we're pretty capable. You know, troubles arise, and what do? We make our plan, we marshal our resources, and we think that if we just have the right tools and resources, we throw enough money and muscle at it, we can make it work. I mean, we tend to think we can fix our own lives if just given enough time. We act so much in life as if it really is up to us. And suddenly there's a doubt in us behind that, a doubt about God's sufficiency. Oh, we believe God is great, but we doubt he's going to come through with enough. We can doubt his love and his care. Sometimes we think God hates me. God is mad at me. That's why there's all this delay and nothing's happening. Notice, even in the psalm, it ends on a note of delay. Do not delay, oh my God. It's in the delays, isn't it? The waiting that the absolutes of our hearts surface. You know, what we really believe about self and God. So you're waiting for something. I mean, we're all waiting for something. What's surfacing in your heart throughout this series as you've been wrestling with the things you're waiting for? What's surfaced in your hearts in this series? Do you believe you are absolutely helpless on your own and that God is absolutely sufficient? You know, this is such a massive insult to our human pride. The reality is we are impotent to ever change what is evil in us or to bring forth anything that's spiritually good. I mean, we didn't create ourselves, nor did we create our spiritual life. God did. And going forward, you know, walking this Christian life, the only way really of transformation and growth in our lives is in this total reliance and dependence on God to receive from him every moment what he gives. I mean, look in Psalm 40, the first few verses, God's actions here. You know, he inclined and heard my cry. He drew me up from the pit. He put a new song in my mouth. We think of David, the great psalmist, the great singer, but nothing's original with him. It's God who's putting the song in him. It all comes from the Lord to receive from him every moment what he gives. And this is not just some Old Testament concept. Jesus says, apart from me, you can do nothing. Disconnected from the life of Jesus, we wither and die spiritually and eventually physically. Paul said to the Galatians, Galatians 3, 1 through 4, O foolish Galatians, who has bewitched you? Did you receive the Spirit by works of the law? No. By doing all these commandments? Or by hearing with faith? Are you so foolish, having begun by the Spirit, are you now being perfected by works of flesh that's pushing more, trying harder? Key to the waiting life is knowing our absolute helplessness and thus this total reliance and dependence upon God, who is supremely sufficient, absolutely sufficient. You know, when we understand that and live, believe out of that, live out of that, well, we understand what waiting really is. It's waiting for the Lord to work, for God to provide, for God to open doors, for God to change hearts. But to wait patiently requires a shift in focus. And it has to be a shift deliberately to the Lord. This phrase in verse 1, I waited patiently, is actually the same basic word, just repeated. We could translate it, waiting, I waited. And the doubling implies earnestness, constancy, patience. And the word to wait itself means to look, to watch, to expect. And so really we could translate verse 1 as looking, I looked to the Lord. Watching, I watched for the Lord. Expecting, I expected the Lord. But you see, everything about this, the watching, the waiting, the expecting, the looking, the focus is the Lord. And yet when we're waiting for something, it seems the very thing that we focus on is what we're missing. I want a better relationship. I want to feel better. I want my life to change. I want, you know, blank, whatever it is. What we want is what we have eyes on. It's what we long for. It's what we expect. But in our waiting, we learn to shift our focus from the object to God. You know, David does this in our psalm. First of all, he does it by way of review. In verse 2, he's reviewing how God delivered him from something, from some past trouble, the pit of destruction. God took him up from the miry bog. Have you ever stepped in mud so deep you got stuck? You lost your shoe trying to get out? Or maybe you had to have somebody grab you by the arm and pull you out because you couldn't get out. Well, this was David. He was stuck in something so deep and tight, he could not get himself out. He was absolutely helpless. Yet his focus was not on the mud, but on God, as absolutely sufficient to rescue him, and God did. Yes, David saw his circumstances, but his focus was on the Lord. And thus, his vision remained focused on the Lord in the new set of circumstances, the new set of troubles that had come his way, which he goes on to list, verse 12. Evils have encompassed me beyond number. My iniquities have overtaken me, and I cannot see. They are more than the hairs of my head. My heart fails me. Be pleased, O Lord, to deliver me. And then he goes on, he speaks of people who are trying to harm him, to kill him, who are mocking him, who are delighting in his hurt. You know, somebody's trying to kill you. I mean, that's pretty riveting. That'll turn your head. You keep your eye on somebody like that. Watch their every move. But David shifts his focus even in that. Yes, he sees his troubles, but his focus is not on his enemies, his circumstances, or even his sins, which he might feel like, I've blown it and God has abandoned me. I'm a loser. God has forsaken me. He doesn't even focus there. He still focuses on God. He has a wider circle of vision, a bigger horizon than himself, his sin, and his most pressing needs, and it's the Lord. He has shifted the focus in all things to the Lord. But what about the Lord? What's he locked in on with God? Go back to verses 4 and 5. Blessed is the man who makes the Lord his trust, who does not turn to the proud, to those who go astray after a lie. You have multiplied, O Lord my God, your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. They are more than can be told. You know, and when we're overwhelmed and having to wait, that's especially when we need to lock the vision of our hearts on the Lord and not turn to our own plans, to reliance on human pride and wisdom, but to keep focused on the Lord who does what? Who multiplies his wondrous deeds and thoughts towards us. Now, if you get nothing else out of the sermon, okay, dial in here. The reason David waits patiently for the Lord is not because God responds to David's waiting. David's waiting is a response to God working. Specifically, God working his wondrous deeds and thoughts toward David. You know, we may be tempted to think that if we have to wait, well, you know, God's trying to teach me patience. And finally, when I learn patience, then God will work. And that is completely backwards because it puts the focus on us getting it right rather than on God. And if we think that God's waiting for us to get it right before he works, folks, we'll be waiting forever because we'll never get it right. God works, therefore we wait. God works, therefore we look, therefore we watch, therefore we expect, and patiently, because our trust is in Him and His doings. And what we understand here is that God is always out in front of us, working His wondrous deeds and thoughts. You have multiplied your wondrous deeds and your thoughts toward us. I love the NIV, how it puts it. Many, O Lord, my God, are the wonders you have done, the things you planned for us, as the things you thought out for us. In Psalm 139, David writes about being formed in his mother's womb. And he says of God, your eyes saw my unformed substance. In your book were written, every one of them, the days that were formed for me, when as yet there was none of them. How precious to me are your thoughts, your plans, your works, oh God. How vast the sum of them. If I were to count them, they would outnumber the sand. Now, what David is saying there in Psalm 139 is that before I ever drew my first breath outside my mother's womb, God, you were thinking vast thoughts about me. And you were laying track for good works in my life. See, God's always prior to us. He's always out in front of us, having laid out His good works for us. Christian, we have a mind-boggling good God and a sovereign God. Your life is not one that is being ignored by God. He is so attentive to what is going on in your life, to the needs, to the places where you are waiting. He's not dreaming up ways to make your life and mine miserable. His plans are for our good. And His thoughts, His plans, His works are always out in front of us. And so when we have to wait, don't get the backwards thinking, oh, I have to learn something here before God will work. No, He's already working. See, this is what helps us be patient, to look, to wait, to watch, to expect. Yes, we may be waiting for an answer, for a resolution of some difficult thing, but God's not dragging His feet. He's already out ahead of us, working for our good. And we see this especially in this psalm. When David writes, verse 6 and 7, burnt offering and sin offering you have not required. Then I said, behold, I have come. In the scroll of the book it is written of me, I delight to do your will, O my God. Now, see, David understands that God has ordered his life. God has His book, and He's written the script for David's life. And in time, God has called and raised David up to do God's will. You know, God has a storyline for your life as well, and mine. He has a storyline for our church. Our days, too, are in His book. But God's wondrous deeds and vast thoughts stretch way beyond David here in Psalm 40. These verses we just read, verses 6 and 7, are quoted later, in Hebrews 10, about Jesus. Let me just read these real quickly. Hebrews 10, verse 4. For it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. Consequently, when Christ came into the world, He said, sacrifices and offerings you have not desired, but a body you have prepared for me. In burnt offerings and sin offerings you have taken no pleasure. Then I said, behold, I have come to do your will, O God, as it is written of me in the scroll of the book. In other words, Jesus is the one that God had in mind way back in Psalm 40. God wrote His book and worked it out that Jesus would come to do the Father's will, to give His life for our sins on the cross, so that we would be sanctified, Hebrews 10:10. In other words, that we would be made right, forgiven, accepted before God. Long before Jesus came, Psalm 40 tells us God was out in front working, putting his plans in place, his wondrous deeds and vast thoughts for our good in Jesus Christ. God is always working in front of us. He's always before us, prior to us. This is what we're looking for as we wait. God in his works. Well, the question that we've asked throughout this series is, what are you waiting for in this season of life? You know, what are we waiting for as a church? Wow, you know, pretty mind-blowing here. Well, I didn't know we'd be waiting for the station like we are. The budget. I know many of you have been praying for years for revival. Thank you for your prayers. You may be waiting in a health situation or a job situation, a marriage, family issue. What are you waiting for? I think one of our biggest problems in our waiting is that it reveals, we come face to face with the reality that we're not in control. Own that. Own it. Our absolute helplessness and dependency upon God. But fix it in the heart. Great is the Lord. He is absolutely sufficient. And so shift the focus to him. Wait, watch, look, expect God to work. He already is. And will we believe this and trust him? And if we don't, we're going to have one miserable life waiting, grumbling and complaining all along about what's missing. But if we trust God's goodness, his wondrous works and thoughts for our good that are always ahead of us, this changes every waiting circumstance. Because it leads us to ask a very different question. What is God up to in this wait of mine? What is God up to in this wait of ours, church? Patiently shift the focus to watch, look, wait expectantly on the Lord and what he is doing. Amen.